Okay, well, today I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Sunde. Sunde I've known for many decades now, and as you'll see, it has a recurring theme in a lot of the DM interviews, with this being the third in the series of Phase 2 of our DM interview series that was started by Nexa. If you haven't listened to any of those previous podcasts, would encourage you definitely to do that. But I've known Sunde for a number of decades, and I'm glad to have him on tonight to get his input as a game master and what it is that goes into him creating games, running games, and how this kind of interacts with other parts of his life, social life, and other aspects of gaming and how this impacts what we do, who we are, and the stories that we're looking to tell. So without further ado, I want to give Sunde a chance to kind of introduce himself, give a little background of how long you've been gaming, and we'll get started.
Hello, I'm Sunde. I actually started gaming. I was 17. I had never actually gamed before I went away to college. But the first time that I picked up a D&D book was long before then. My first interaction with Dungeons and Dragons was my brother telling me about this cool game that he had played with some friends of his when he was in high school and I was still in grade school. I went to the library and I picked up these books and I checked them out on my mother's library card and I got them home. It was during the early 80s, and so at this point in time, there are all these horror stories about gaming and Dungeons and Dragons, and my mother found
And you jumped in
these.
this at just the opportune time.
She found these relics of evil. And she burned them.
Oh my God, really? Oh, the library book?
Honestly. And then I was like, Mom, those are library books. She's like, well, you should know better than to check out that evil stuff. I'm like, they're on your library card.
Oh my God.
But my mother actually having, after finding out that I was interested in this, she did some reading and realized that, like so many other things in life, it's not the game that had problems. It was individuals who were having issues, and it was reflected through the media that was important to them. And so my mother relaxed on that topic, and I've been incredibly drawn to the world of gaming ever since. I think I was just like 9, maybe 10. I had Before I ever played my first game of D&D, the second edition players, Dungeons and Dragons, the Dungeon Master Guide and the Monster Manual, I had them memorized before I ever even picked up my first set of dice. It was just what I wanted, and I always knew.
That's cool. I did not know about the whole incident with the D&D books being set on fire. I think that's the first time I've run across them. I have run across other people in other interviews where it's been kind of a strange topic to bring up with gaming, but that is the first time anyone has actually set fire to the books.
I didn't.
So.
I didn't. It was just the time. It was like so many people were afraid of it. They thought that it was evil. And my mother and I had numerous conversations about it before she actually relaxed. I'm like, just like individuals who gamble, there's nothing wrong with playing hearts or spades or poker, but there are people that have problems. And they happen to play the game, and when the two collide, that's problematic. And it was the 80s. D&D got a really bad rap, and so gaming got a really bad rap for a period of time. I like to believe that we've moved past that for the most part as a society. But it was always really interesting to me because it was very similar to it was in my mind, even then, it was a way to embody all those ideals of heroism that we are talked about that are talked about when we first are introduced to fables and to legends like King Arthur and Robin Hood and these ideas of individuals holding this shaping the the becoming the icons that are passed down from to generations. And then, you know, as you get more into the game, you realize there's different facets and what you want to play and things you can bring out through your role playing. But yes, I was interested in D&D long before I ever played. But that was long before I played and even longer before I became a GM.
Very cool. Now, with that being said, you know, you talked a little bit about the legends that we had get introduced as children and early reading. Now, with that being the case, do you prefer, and I think I may know the answer from this from knowing you as long as I have, but for our listeners, do you prefer to run homebrew games or would you run pre-printed modules and campaigns? Or did you prefer to write the story yourself?
In all honesty, I've only ever run two modules in all the time that I've GM'd. And neither one of those were for D&D. I play all different types of games, but I've never run a D&D module. Not that there's anything wrong with them. I think that I've played in a few, and those were some incredible, fun, fantastic games. But there were stories that I wanted to tell. And it was a medium in which to do so. And it harkens back to one of the two oldest professions. Storytelling is one of the oldest professions. And with Dungeons and Dragons, with Marvel, with any type of role-playing, it's even better because you're not telling the story by yourself. It's you and a group of other individuals combining together to create a story that you could not have ever produced on your own. It's you and the other minds at that table, or now through around the world that come together in which to tell a story. You get to choose the setting. You get to as a GM, you get to have more nuanced control over the world. But of the primary actors, there's no way that you can ever fully prepare for what they're going to do. But you have to constantly shape the world around them. And that is my idea of magic.
That's an excellent answer. Thank you. Now, that leads right into my next question. How would you describe your game mastering style? And you bring up the point that you never know what players are going to do. And we were literally just having this conversation the other day where, you know, I was running a group of you on an adventure, and I had an idea. I had this, okay, this is where we're going to go. We're going to go from A to B to C to D. And I think it's yet to be remaining to be seen, but I think you are all going to go off into a completely different tangent. So B, C, D, I need a whole new alphabet now because the story is taking a turn that I'm like, wait a minute, why? I never thought you would do that. But you're like, well, we can't complete this quest. We have to do this other thing with this item that we found because this thing's pure evil and we're not going to do this. So I'm like, okay, well, scrap these notes. So that's not going to work. So thankfully, I've got a little bit of time to kind of restructure. But how would you describe your game mastering style when you're sitting down there? You know, what's important to you and how do you go about doing that?
Okay, as a game master, when I'm making my note for a game, when I'm planning out my adventure, I make sure that I have all of the important NPCs made up and fully formulated, at least in my head, their personalities. But then it comes to the point of the nuance, the details of what are going to happen. And in my many years of gaming, the players don't do what you expect. And I was about to say they don't do what you want, but in all honesty, they end up doing things more spectacular than you ever could have dreamed. So it's great that they don't do what you expect. So as a GM, I have the NPCs of note, their personalities fleshed out in my mind, if not on paper. And then what I try to do is I try to come up with... Well, especially if I'm running a campaign, I try to come up with broad overstrokes, points that I want them to reach. And I try to make sure that they have an opportunity to get there, to those points. If the players go off in a way that I never imagined, that is not reconcilable with the ideas that I had, then it's now my job to ride the effects of those butterfly wings that have changed the courses of the wind patterns. But if there are huge overarching effects that are going on in the world, sometimes I know about them and they've happened anyway. And those effects, even though the players have chosen to go off in a completely different direction, those effects may hit the players much later down the line. But I try to give the players the room for their flexibility and creativity, because while it is true that it is my job to run the rest of the world, it's their story. It's the story of their lives with that world that I've created. And so I try my best to not hamper the players while still making a framework for them to operate in.
Well said. Okay, that's interesting. I like how you phrased that along the lines that beyond the story, because we've talked a lot about that, and especially in some of the other interviews where we have that story, but you're telling the story of the players' lives, because they really are the stars of this. And it's an interactive experience. It's not me just saying this is what you're going to do and no one having any choice in the matter. It's providing this world, this sandbox for you to explore and play in. And of course, you guys always want to choose the other sandbox that I didn't think you're going to play in. So I put all the toys in one, you guys jump into the other. So, no,
Sandbox
real
dude, they're
effect.
going for the swings.
Exactly. So, now with the storytelling that you tell, and something I really wanted to touch on, because there's only been one other interviewee, and we didn't really touch on this in his interview, but you're one of the few people that we've interviewed who have children, and your kids are from teenage down to infant. And I wanted to really get your opinion on this, because it's something we haven't addressed on the channel before, was parenting and gaming, in terms of Dungeons and Dragons. Now, there's a whole debate on like online gaming. I would really like to kind of focus it on, sitting at the table, playing a game like Dungeons and Dragons, Marvel Superheroes, Pathfinder, some of those things, and get your feedback on that, because it's a topic we haven't touched on in the channel, and I'm thinking that there may be some of our podcast listeners who have kids, or maybe younger, they're starting out, and they have young children, or even if they get kids in the teens, and they're, how do you balance gaming at the table and parenting? When your two kids run a pretty wide age gambit, or age range, I should say, how do you balance that? And then, how, as a parent, do you make any modifications to the games for that? And are there lessons or educational benefits that you see in gaming for the
All
kids?
right, that's a phenomenal question. It's a question that I'm still trying to figure out the answers to. I
You haven't
have two
completely figured
kids.
out parenting. I was hoping that was going to be the next one. It's for all the parents there, so just
I have two kids. I have a 13-year-old and I have a 2-year-old, and in all honesty, they are the best things in my life. I am very fortunate to have them both, although I am not the biological father of the 13-year-old. He is an awesome addition to the family, and it's amazing how many similar traits he and I have, with there being no genetic bond. But that having been said, the I came into the life of the older child when he was about 5 or 6, and he his mother had been a long-term friend who I lost contact with, and when he came into my life, I was still gaming, but because of video games and the books that he read, there was a lot of overlap in our interests. And when his mother joined our game table, and he would come over to the house. At the same time, we'd make sure that there were things for him to do to keep him engaged, but to also let him know that if he had a need or if there was a strong desire, that he would not be cut off from us. All the while trying to make sure that he had everything at his disposal to keep him entertained so that he did not take away from the gaming experience. And in all honesty, he's one of the best hecklers that I've ever met in my life. And he is an avid reader, and he was also into those same fables and lore that drew all of us to the table. And at this point in time, we were playing a superhero game. So these were things that interest him. And it was amazing for him to sit and watch the stories unfold before him. And so he, even though he was not at a point in time that he could play, he was wanting to be in the room so that he could hear the new legends being formed in front of him. And these legends are being created by people that he knew, which made it even more amazing to him. And when he got a little bit older, he was begging to play. And so I started running a game with a superhero-based game. It was in Marvel, using the old-school Marvel system that still had all the components of the Marvel system, but also gave me the opportunity to do a few little moral tales to show how to help guide in decision making without being heavy-handed about it. But this was even before his mother and I were involved in any way, shape, or form. Years later, after his mother and I got together, we got married and we had a newborn. And that completely changes the dynamic. Being able to interact with people who are very young but have already begun to discover the world and discover heroes, be they like superheroes or be they like Hercules or any of this, is completely different than trying to game while you have someone who just has pure need. And that's what it is for the infant. And I am very fortunate that my friends made room for us during that early time period, because there is no way to put off the needs of a newborn, to put off the needs of a toddler, because they're not at the point where you can reason with them or you can give them a distract. I am also very fortunate that our younger son is incredibly smart, scary smart. And so he's gotten to the point where he is able to be distracted for at least some periods of time. But the balance in between being a parent while gaming is an ever-changing dynamic, and I am fortunate that I have co-players that have been tolerant and aware that that my family's needs were changing. So it's going to be different for every gaming group, no matter what you try. Although as a player, it is still a lot easier than it is as a GM. I have found that as a GM, I've forgotten to drop clues that I wanted to, and sometimes little things have spilled out that I did not intend to spill out. And I've discussed this because I also am fortunate that there are quite a few of the players that sit at our table have also been GMs. And I've discussed this with some of those GMs on other occasions. They're like, oh, I didn't catch that. You have to remember, as a GM, there's a thousand things going on in your mind. And so what you know may be a mistake, the players don't necessarily know. has been a mistake, and you have to keep the game going. It's like theater. There's no time to stop and rewind it in the middle of the show. You have to keep the game moving. And what was a mistake, the players may not realize was a mistake, and it may actually end up being something more beautiful for them. It's not just your game. It's everyone's.
That's well said. Not that I ever made mistakes running. So
No, you never. Never.
Never happened there.
We're getting XP next week, right?
Absolutely. And you're getting a bonus really for that one. So it's just the best one being recently, hey, Tony, how did that Drider, who's a large creature, get through that doorway? Because that looks like it's less than 5 feet wide. And for those not in the know, this game, I actually had to change the map at the fairly last minute, and then I had set up an encounter with the original version and didn't realize the new map. You talk about players not realizing it. They had no idea. They're like, oh, no, there must be a secret entrance because he couldn't get through this doorway because it wouldn't make sense. I'm like, oh, totally, absolutely. Yeah, there's a secret entrance. Yeah, there's a secret way in. As I'm writing down the notes, like, okay, add secret passage to back of room. Oh, yeah, totally, there's a secret passage there, guys. So very well said, sir. Very well said. Now, do you, through gaming, especially in terms of decision-making and taking responsibility, do you impart any of those lessons, especially to your older son? Is there anything where you've incorporated that, like you're trying to teach a lesson that, you know, just saying, okay, this is the way you should do it, but hey, if I do this through the game, it's teaching that. Do you incorporate any of that, or is that a thought in your mind when you're running it?
When I'm running his game, it is. When I'm running games for him, it is. Because, yes, I am the GM, and our goal at gaming is to have fun. But I am also a parent, and that job is 24/7. It is one of the few things in the world that matters more to me than gaming. I gaming entered my life when I was. When I was 9 or 10, it has been with me for more than 3/4 of my life. My oldest, I've known for 10 years, and I love him more. But gaming helped to form the person that I am. What many people don't realize is that gaming helps you learn decision making. It helps you learn problem solving, and so I like to make sure that I give him those opportunities when I run a game for him. I give situations that are not morally clear-cut, but they do have a distinct, but the choices that he has put in make it such that he has challenge, but he also knows he's playing a game that's called Marvel Superheroes, which is way to my benefit, because with the video game industry, quite oftentimes you're not playing a heroic person, and so when he gets to these moral quandaries in the game, oftentimes one of the other players goes, "Remember, this is Marvel Superheroes," and I don't have to. He goes, "Oh yes, we're supposed to be trying to make the world better." And so when he gets to thinking like that during the game, and it's reinforced through his life by his mother and I, we're trying to make the world a better place. Sometimes you don't think that they hear you. Sometimes you don't realize how much your kids are listening. But every now and then, he'll go and start talking about a Marvel game from 2 or 3 years ago, and he'll tell the story, and he has picked up on all the little nuances that I was putting in there for him so that he would have the opportunity to learn a life lessons. And even though you may not think that he heard you, even though you may not think that child listened in that moment, he looks back on those moments, especially something that was done in a game that he thought was awesome and was cool, and they reflect on the game because it was awesome and cool. I don't think that he reflects on lectures the way that he reflects on the game. And so I do believe that a gaming can be a very great parenting tool. It depends on how you bring it to the table.
That's very helpful. Thank you. That's really something I wanted to get at the heart of, because we haven't tackled that topic. And I thought I was going to do an injustice if we hadn't actually asked that question and got that. And I really appreciate you sharing that, because I know it gets into, family and some of these things. And I really appreciate you sharing that with us and all the listeners that we have. Moving along.
I'm not going to let him listen to this, because then he'll think that I've been trying to manipulate him all this time.
Oh, yes, right. Exactly. Well, we can edit that out for the version we'll play for him. You know, it'll be the family save one where it's like, wait a minute, you've been teaching me morality lessons here the whole time. This isn't fun anymore. I'm learning. It's like, oh no, it's like, hey, you just figure out there's vegetables in this thing. So it's like, you're feeding me healthy stuff. But
I've been putting vegetables in your D&D.
Exactly. So now moving right along, to get into one of our steadfast questions here. There's a series of them. There's the main three that I've wanted to ask each time and kind of going through. And opening this up is going to be, what is your best gaming memory that you have? It could be as a player, as a game master, but what's your best memory of gaming?
So I've been running games for decades, and I have so many awesome memories that I could share. Some of them have been at the table while you were running, some while other individuals that have been interviewed already have been running, some while Kirby was running, some while Steve was running, but being the person that I am, I'm going to share one of the ones while I was running. So one of my favorite moments, the one that I'm going to share right now, all started with a mistake. It was a clerical error. I had been running the same 3.5 D&D game for over a year. The players had gone through tons of stress, and they had just the game session before hit 12th or 13th level, depending upon the player. And there was a lot of political intrigue in the game, and I knew that the players needed just a good old dungeon crawl. And so I had set up this dungeon crawl with the prime goal of bringing back an artifact to continue the overarching storyline. So the players go, and they get to the dungeon, and the cleric, who was the centerpiece of the party, all the players were important, but the cleric had been the individual who had made connections with people in such a way that she was their center, had just gotten the sixth level spell, Find the Path. And it had not occurred to me that this player had just gotten this path, and this spell, and I had all of this stuff planned for multiple game sessions of them scrounging around in these underground layers before they get to the big boss, the big bad. She has this spell. She just got it. She pops it off at the very beginning. And while I can't find the artifact, she knows that it can lead her to something else that she knows is down there. And so the players find the most direct path to the most imminent danger. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So she's playing a priest of Pelor, the god of the sun. And there's these high, incredibly powerful from the plane of shadow. And she feels that it's her duty to wipe them out, to make sure they do not exist in the prime where they're not supposed to be. And also at sixth level, she was able to summon a planar ally that was powerful enough that she got the least powerful of her deity's angels. This spell, the angel is supposed to barter with you for a cost to do this, to do the mission. The angel finds out what the mission is and says to her, oh. When she says, what's the price? The angel says, oh, I'm certain by the end of it, we will both pay the price. And so everyone's feeling very ominous because I did not plan for them to have this battle for another two levels. Yeah. They were supposed to
Foreshadowing.
have more powers, more items in tow, but no, the party's like, oh, this is he's not playing with us. This is a serious fight. And a party that while they played well together, they had a tendency to just rush in and like pound on the enemy. They played this fight incredibly strategically. They brought forth all the gear and all everything they had to bear, and this fight was beyond their beyond a level that they should have been able to manage, but they pulled it off. And in the last two rounds of it, the angel died and the priest died, and the whole party was devastated. And as gaming ends for the night and people are packing up to go home, the cleric looks down at her sheet and goes, oh my goodness! She forgot she had an item that would have prevented a lot of the damage that she took from cold. And we just calculate the last two rounds of damage that she took in cold, her character would have still been alive. But I'm sorry, these players had come together, they had done all this hard work. I was not going to retcon that last engagement because it showed what they could do when they were at their best. So I told him, like, I'm not going to retcon it, but come early for the next game session. You and I need to talk. So she shows up early, and I ask her, so is this still the character that you want to play? Absolutely. And we talked about her character's past because she had given me a brief character history previously, but we talked about her character's past. And I started having a dialogue with her with the she knew that she was in the afterlife, and she was having this dialogue with the priest that had first brought her into the church. And from how the priest was responding, player realized, I'm not talking to the priest. And she realizes she was actually speaking to Paylor. And she goes, oh, and like Paylor goes, okay, you figured out who I am. And I have to tell you, you've done so much for me already. The halls are open to you. You can go home. You can rest. You've done your part. And like the good cleric, she's like, what do you need of me? He says, there's more work to be done. And she goes, then I accept it. I will go back. I'll do your work. And while we were talking, we had discussed, the initiation rites, because, you don't really discuss those with your characters most of the time. So the initiation rites for when she became a cleric, I told her that she was blessed in the light, in the she was blessed in the light, and the radiance, and in the flames of Pelor. And so I told her, the priest that brought you first brought you in, he says, I bless you in the light of Pelor, and takes your hands. I bless you in the radiance of Pelor, and brings your hands to his chest. And then says, I bless you in the flames of Pelor, and kisses her on the lips, and then says, I'm sorry, but this is gonna hurt. And then I told her to go back to the gaming table, and that she could say nothing. If she said anything about what went on in our room, then her character could not come back. So we went back to the table. People began to show up. We get in gaming going, and they're like asking what's going on with her. And I just keep gaming rolling from the point where she had died. They find out that where they are, the creatures killed by shadows come back the next night as a shadow if they are not, if their bodies are not disposed of. They have to be burned. And so the players do run the whole day long trying to figure out a way to save her, all to naught. And like, this is taking up half the game session, and the players finally realize, no, she's gone. She's not coming back. So the players prepare her body. The other female player in the body bathes her and covers her in oils that were special to our god. They wrap her body in linen, and then they put her body on the funeral pyre. And all the players are at the point of crying. including the pair of those in the back room. But she's at the point of crying because she finally realizes what's happening. The players light the funeral pyre, and it bursts into flames. The wrappings around her burst into flames. All of her hair burns off, and she stands up from the funeral pyre, blessed in the flames of Pelor. And everyone was just like awestruck because they just spent a day grieving for this person who legitimately had died. But the glory of her god brought her back because he still needed her. And that's how we ended the game session.
That is epic. I'm sorry, that's pretty cool. Would have been cool to be in that game. That's... Now, had you planned to have it go out that way, or is that just something that went down because, okay, they had this... Well, you mentioned it was a clerical error, so this storyline was never really intended to go that route. This was...
It wasn't intended to go that route. And the only reason why I brought her back was because it was truly a math error. She had just simply forgotten that she had this item. She would have taken a lot less damage. She would have been wrecked, but she would have been alive. And I wasn't going to take that from her. It was just a math error. And so there was a legitimate way to bring back her. There was a legitimate cause to bring back her character. But with all the things that the players had done, I wasn't going to take that fight from them either. And the only way to reconcile the two was to provide something that you actually can do in the D&D world. I could provide her with a miracle. She was a high-level priest who had done her deity's bidding, who was willing to continue to do her deity's bidding, and knew that it would cost her in order to do so. And there was a deity who was willing to bring her back to do his work, especially in a place that was enshrouded in his anthem. It was like, it was the thing that was absolutely opposite of his nature, but she was willing to go back there to do his work. It also gave me the opportunity to do one other thing, because when she came back, the minor angel that fell with her, because the essence, all the wrappings and things that he had, they burned those as well. And when she rose up, she was holding, it was not a Holy Avenger, it was a Crusader, and it really pissed the paladin off because the paladin was lawful good. And the angel came back as a chaotic good sword of Apollo. I mean, but it actually worked out because of the overarching story, which is a story for another time.
Very cool. Thank you for sharing that. That's interesting game. Now, the follow-up question to that one being, what is your worst gaming memory? It could be as a player, as a game master. What was the worst thing? Ideally, we'd like one where you were running and something didn't work right because, you know, we have new listeners that are looking to get into DMing, and part of the reason we've created this series is to share our thoughts and things like that. But what's the worst gaming memory that you've had, either as a player or DM, whichever one it may be?
So that is a fabulous question, and it harkens back to something that you had already asked earlier about how do you manage to balance the time between game? How do you manage to find that balance between parenting and running? It was one of the first game sessions that I was running after, it wasn't one of the first. Our youngest had turned about one. When he was an infant, it was actually easier because his needs were much more clearly defined and he slept a lot. But by the time he was one, he was much more curious and much more needy. And do not misunderstand me. He is the joy of my life. But I had all these intricate details that I planned on dropping into the game that week. And while he is usually content to be with his mother or with his mother also was at our gaming table, which is so incredibly awesome. While he's usually content to be with his mother or I on this day, he wanted his father. So I'm trying to keep the game going, to drop all these subtle hints and clues. And the little one just needed my attention. And I felt everything falling apart. In addition to this, I was suffering from catastrophic dice failure. My dice would not roll what I wanted to save my life. And the combination of all those things brought me so much stress that I could not enjoy the evening. After the game session was over, I was feeling horrible. And then I looked around the table and realized that everyone at the table was laughing and having a good time, and half the problems that I had that evening, they were not even aware of. Like I said, when you're GMing and something goes wrong, there's a good chance that your players don't know that you did not do what you wanted. And the players had not experienced all the stress and angst that I had experienced that day. They'd had a good game session. For me, it was like nothing went the way that I intended, and I knew every single thing, every single pin that was dropped. Afterwards, when I knew that my players had still enjoyed themselves, I felt a little bit better. But for a while, I had contemplated putting down the game screen for a while, the amount of attention that it needed. But my players didn't fully. But yeah, it's a hard transition. There'll be days where it seems to be a lot more smoothly than others. There'll be days when the needs of the family far overtake your dedication to the game. But you just have to find your balance. And remember that if you're at the right gaming table, your players are there to support you just like you're there to support them.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to remember too, is that it really is something where players need to work with the game master, which is one of the questions where I want to point out with things where when I'm asking, you know, why am I asking what the worst game memory is? It's not to slam a player or to slam a game master. It's that we all run across these things. I've had rough days
running
games.
And we can learn from them. Hopefully you can learn from someone else's struggle. And oftentimes, if you have the same struggle that some of the other GMs have had, knowing that they've had it too makes it a little bit better. Because let me tell you, when that question's been asked of some of the other GMs, I've experienced that. I felt that. So it's a good question to ask for GMs to remind them that they're not the only ones to experience it, and for new GMs to know that when they hit it, they're not alone.
Yeah, we've all been there. I mean, I've had rough days where the game didn't go the way I wanted to, or players weren't happy with a call that I made. And it's ultimately, I think one of the recurring themes here is that, you know, if this isn't fun, if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong. If there's no point to doing this if we don't enjoy it. And it's, but it's, you know, characters are important to people. And then rules and those interpretations, these things happen. Life happens. I know, especially I had not run in a long time and really started running frequently again within the last year or so. Sporadically at Gen Con, I would run games, and that was
very grateful.
So, yeah, thank you. So, I mean, and I'm truly enjoying it. So, getting out there and telling these stories again, and it's just, yeah, there's hiccups to it, and you know, there's upsides and downsides, but you know, all in all, it's a lot of good memories. So, well. Thank you, Sunday. I appreciate you answering that one. Now, this is the most loaded question in the entire series here, because I'm going to put you on the spot there. What is your favorite game? If you have to pin it down, really want to pin it down to one, because I had a couple people try to like, well, I'll get a top three. It's like, no, what's the favorite? You got to call one, you know. So next is On Me Day.
I love lots and lots of games. But D&D in its many iterations has to be my favorite. I love Marvel. I love Rifts. I love almost every single role-playing game that I've played, but my heart comes back to D&D. And I may not be a fair person to ask, because I was in love with D&D for 7 years before I ever picked up dice. And so, but there's something about the genre, and there's something about the history behind D&D. Because the genre can be told in other game systems. I mean, Palladium has a fantasy line. There's numerous other fantasy RPGs. But my heart keeps coming back to D&D. When 3.5, when third edition first came out, I was like, this isn't D&D. But it was. It was just the evolution of the game. When fourth edition came out, I said, this isn't D&D. And it wasn't. It was WoW. But fifth edition.
Which was a great article, Pathfinder versus D&D. But I do one of these days, I want to have a podcast where we discuss, you know, the different editions of D&D. Because I'm inclined to agree with you. I know that there's another.
I actually enjoy 4th edition D&D. But it's WoW. That's fine. I mean, you know, it's just a different game. But there's flavor notes that 4th edition had missing for me. I know other people that love 4th edition. And it's a good game. It just does not yell D&D when I pick up dice to play it. But 5th edition, it is a solid, solid structured game. I enjoy it. I eventually came around to love 3rd edition 3.5. The first one that I played was 2nd edition. But when I moved down to Georgia, I ran into the group that I ended up playing with played... First edition with Unearthed Arcana, and there's a beauty in all of it. I just keep getting called back to D&D. It's where I'm drawn. I love to play Marvel. It would be my number two, but D&D is where I go home.
No, that's cool. I know, just give any listeners a little bit of background, the game that I'm running in with Sunday, they played Marvel Superheroes 4. I think Steve said that game's been running for 7 some odd years, going on 8 now. Yeah. Or would that be closer to 9? And he literally called me up and said, well, we've been playing so much Marvel, we love it, we're not stopping that, but you guys built this really rich world. He asked, can you run anything but Marvel for us? And it was like, okay, but it still was open. But, you know, and of course, first thing I thought of was D&D. Let's run that. 5th edition had just come out about a year prior, and I'd been itching. I'd bought the books. I'd been itching. I got a little bit of a sample of it running part of Curse of Strahd at Gen Con the year before that. And just, yeah, for me, it always kind of came home to D&D. There's some other great games out there, and I kind of agree with you. But I really want to know which one is your favorite, because it's overwhelming. It seems like Dungeons & Dragons really is the game for everyone. I believe, if I remember correctly, it's half of what's run on Roll20 is actually D&D 5th edition. With a very distant second being Pathfinder, but I have to double check those numbers. There, we posted some of the information on a previous blog posting
on the blog earlier. I can't remember what the breakdown was, but it was 5th edition by Pathfinder, then pretty much everything else. But I mean, D&D has so much history behind it. There's so much materials that have already been put out there for the players. And so it has a lot more to draw from if you're a new player. That having been said, there is something for the new experience. For a game that doesn't have as much history, because then you may feel more making your own. But there's something nice about going home. I'm sorry.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. There's this, that is, for lack of a word, I don't want to call it a comfort zone, but it's that place everyone's knows, and that it's just, you know, we've all been there. We've all run in some D&D game to some extent or another. And it seems to me, just from looking at Gen Con, I don't see a lot of new role-playing games coming out. I see a lot of development on the board game side of things now, like the RPGs in a box, which Kirby's talked about, and he's an avid player of those. I'm very familiar with that. And there's not a lot of new games coming out, at least not from what I saw, in terms of new role-playing tabletop RPG games. it's now this market's kind of shifted where we were, you know, it was a lot of the trading card games, then online really took that. Now it's moved into the new generation of board games. You know, these aren't your traditional, you know, like Monopoly, Clue, those types of games. It's Sorry, those types of board games. These are very elaborate board games which are encapsulating a role-playing element to it. Like Shadows of Gloomstone and stuff like that.
But yeah, I still prefer to come home. I've enjoyed a lot of those games, and I hope that you edit this. I'm trying to think of some of the names of some of these games. Like we were playing some of them just like.
Oh, you broke up there a little bit, Sunday.
I'm sorry, I just lost it. It's okay. I was losing the names of some of the things that I was going to talk about, so it's okay.
Okay, we'll just cut that out. Sorry. But no, there's a lot of them coming out there. So even, you know, they're taking D&D to this new one coming out from, I believe it's Cataclysm Games, I want to say. I could be mistaken on that, but it's called Dragonfire, which is basically D&D at a tabletop. Wizards of the Coast had done that with some of its games. You know, they have a Curse of Strahd version. There was a Tomb of Elemental Evil, I believe, in a couple others where they took the fourth edition rules and converted them into a tabletop game, which kind of, you and I have had some discussions in the past about, you know, fourth edition just conveniently working that well with a board game, but so interesting to see how it evolves. But but thank you for your answers there. Appreciate that again. Now, kind of in closing, what kind of advice would you give someone who is considering listening to this series, they're thinking about running games, or they've just started and they may be struggling, or they're not 100% sure of themselves? Because I know, for example, a big demand at Gen Con is getting people that will run games. You know, the Gen Con's attendance has begun to expand. It's growing greater and greater each year, and it's trying to get people to run games. Even I've never run a game at Gen Con, and kind of see that as like, you know, the Super Bowl of gaming, you know, so it's like, man, can I do that? But for anyone who is looking to get into this, or is running it, or looking for advice or assistance, listening to the series of interviews, what kind of advice would you give to a new game master, someone who's looking to get into it or just starting? What kind of advice would you give if somebody said, hey, I'm really interested in this, I'm starting it, but what do you think I should do, or what kind of advice could you give a new player?
All right. Like we said earlier in the evening, the players are going to decide things that you've never thought of. So when you're plotting out your adventure, in my opinion, it is very wise to have areas that you want your players to hit, but give them multiple paths to get there. Don't even set up the path sometimes unless it's necessary for your map. But give them multiple paths to get there, so that you can bring them along the ride of your story without railroading them down a single path. Because there's as a player, it is very inhibiting to be playing a role playing game and have your decisions predetermined for you. So make sure you give your players the flexibility, and make sure you do one other thing. It might possibly be the most important thing as a GM. Make sure you're having fun, because if you're not having fun, then eventually your players will pick up on that, and it will take away from their experience as well.
No, thank you. And I think that's really one thing theme that's been a recurring thing. We kind of talked a little bit about this in the beginning of the podcast, that, you know, it's about having fun. Ultimately, we all get together. I know our group, we get together once a week, and we only do that because we enjoy it. You know, it's driving out there. People drive some distance. You know, we're not close. And but we all come together once a week, sit around a table. It's not just for the free meal. You know, so it's just, you know, but
you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. So Sunday's wife are kind enough to provide us dinner, which we it's sometimes it's like, oh, my God, man, it's like a home cooked meal. It's awesome. But it's really come together and sharing these stories, and I've really enjoyed running in games with you guys. Steve did kill me twice in Marvel in that, so I'm on my third character in his Marvel game, which apparently though is par for the course. So it's just everyone's like, oh yeah, we've been through this a couple times. So
Don't worry, I've lost more characters than you have.
Okay, yeah. We practically did an entire party wipe that one time, but it's still it's fun. It's the stories that we tell. So
let me say, getting a party wipe and Marvel, that's impressive.
that was kudos. I was like, how do you die in Marvel superheroes? I'm like, geez, you know, it's just and I have noticed they do tend to make that a little harder. It's still pretty easy to get taken out, but it is actually still pretty hard to die in Dungeons and Dragons now, the way they do things. But it can still be done. Someday I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. You know, you've got family responsibilities, sports will coming off the holidays. This podcast will be airing sometime probably within the second week or so of January or so, depending on when we can get that posted. But as we're recording this, it is January 1st, 2018. So I want to wish everybody a happy new year. Keep looking forward to our next series of podcasts. We've got more coming along as we come into spring and going into 2018. But I want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. If this is your first interview in the DM series that you've heard, definitely check out the site. I have several other interviews, and our webmaster, Nexa, started the series off with his Phase 1 interviews, including an interview with yours truly. So definitely check those out if you're interested in them. We look forward to your comments below. Definitely let us know what you think. If there's something you'd like to hear us discuss, I think it's come up a couple times, like 4th edition versus 5th edition, which one's better. There's also been some hinting at D&D versus Pathfinder, and I know we had an article posted, but if there's a podcast topic you'd like to hear, definitely drop us a line, let us know. But once again, Sunday, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule. Appreciate it. And
Thank you much for asking me, and thank you all much for doing this, because it's really awesome to hear from other GMs, not just the guys that you happen to know, but GMs across the board. It reminds us of why we do this, and it actually has given me some pretty cool ideas. Listening to the other GMs out there has revitalized the spark, and so I thank you for doing this.
Oh, you are very welcome, sir. Thank you very much. But definitely keep tabs on the site and tune in for our next podcast coming up soon. Wish everybody a very happy new year.